This episode of The Full Ratchet is brought to you by Square One Bank. Square One is a leading provider of venture debt and banking services to startups, growth stage companies, and their investors. Learn more at squareonebank.com.
Welcome to the podcast about investing in startups, where existing investors can learn how to get the best deal possible. And those that have never before invested in startups can learn the keys to success from the venture experts. Your host is Nick Moran, and this is The Full Ratchet.
Welcome back to TFR. Today we feature autonomous vehicle expert Evangelos Samoudis. The VC who wrote the book on mobility joins us to discuss key drivers, big data, business models, exits, large auto, geographic centers of influence, and advice for founders. Here's the interview with Synapse Partners MD, Evangelos Samoudis. Double E and PhD Evangelos Samoudis joins us today on the program. Evangelos is co-founder and managing director of Synapse Partners, a venture firm that invests in early stage startups developing big data applications. He also advises global corporations on startup-driven innovation and information technology. Previously, Evangelos served as managing director at Trident Capital and Apax Partners. In 2012 and 2014, he was named top investor in online advertising, and many of us know him as author of the popular book, The Big Data Opportunity in Our Driverless Future. Evangelos, welcome to the program.
Very good to be here. Thank you.
You're in Greece at the moment, but you guys are based in Menlo Park. Is that right?
I am. I'm visiting my parents here in Greece. I left Greece about 40 years ago, but every year I come to spend some time with them.
Good for you. How's the weather out there?
Hey, it's actually very hot right now, seasonably so, but no complaints.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I appreciate you making the time. So maybe we'll just start off. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of your path to venture?
Absolutely. I left, as I said, Greece about 40 years ago to study at Caltech. Eventually, I got a PhD in computer science in the area of machine learning and very large databases. That was in the late 80s when during the previous AI spring. After working in the 80s, a few years as a software engineer at the Digital Equipment Corporation, I came to Silicon Valley in 1990. Between 90 and 2000, I did two startups, both in the area of data and analytics and machine learning. And after selling the first and before starting the second, I was a general manager at IBM, running their business intelligence solutions division, global responsibility. And after selling my second startup, I was invited to become a partner at Apax Partners, which is a large private equity firm. At that time, they were doing also some venture. I got hooked into venture and eventually moved to Trident Capital. But I came to be a venture investor, as I said, after spending years as an engineer and obviously as an entrepreneur and corporate executive.
Can you tell us a bit more about the startups that you founded?
Yeah, the first one was called Recon, and it was in the area of financial analytics. That was, as I said, late 90. We were working on trading models and early versions of derivatives. It was a very interesting time because both the technology was new, but also the venture capital was not as developed at that time as it was later on in that decade with the first internet wave. So raising money and building the company was an interesting experience with a lot of important lessons, which helped me in my second company, which was actually a much bigger success than the first.
What was that second company?
The second company was called Customer Analytics, and it was a company that was we were taking a lot of CRM data from a variety of systems. Primarily, we were working with financial services institutions, retail banks, and other financial service institutions. And we were developing a better understanding of the consumers. So by the time we sold the company, we had over 100 corporate clients. And as I said, we were acquired by a public company called Exchange Applications, which doesn't exist anymore, but at that time was one of the high flyers in the CRM space.
Got it. So can you tell us a little bit about the investment focus and the philosophy at Synapse?
So at Synapse, we're doing a couple of things which I try to combine from my previous 15 years as a venture investor. We've decided to focus exclusively on companies that develop big data applications. So for us, these are applications that combine big data with AI-based methods for exploiting that data. They can be horizontal applications or they can be vertical. And in terms of vertical, we focus on three industries, on the automotive and by extension transportation industries, but also telco and financial services. The second aspect of our approach is that we form these very close relations with corporations in these three industries that I mentioned. And in identifying these corporations, we try to not only focus on companies that are important players in their industry, but also companies that are thought leaders and they look over the horizon. And we spend a lot of time with these companies, a lot more than I've ever spent as a VC in my prior years. And through these interactions, we identify their strategic problems that can take big data solutions. And where we put our own expertise and experience is in determining which of these problems really will have general appeal and could be worthy of investments to startups.
Got it. Can you give us a short example or a little case study?
Yeah. So if you look at what we are doing, actually, I'll give you a couple of examples. So one of the companies that we invested very shortly after we started the firm was a company called X15 Software. So we came at X15 by talking to, as it turned out, three of our telco corporate partners. And we identified that they had a problem with analyzing very large data sets with security alerts, but doing so in an economic manner because they were seeing their data sizes increase tremendously and the business models that some of their existing vendors were using would not allow them to examine as much data as they felt it was necessary to. So we looked at a number of startups that were working in the space at that time, and we settled on, we selected X15. And as part of the work that we do, we maintain significant databases with data about the companies that we track. In fact, our database today contains about 5,500 startups that we track in great detail, and then we score constantly, score in terms of their ability to perform and other quantities that we believe are important. So we ended up investing in X15. Shortly after we invested, we introduced them to these corporate partners that had told us about the problem. They worked with a couple of these companies, these corporations. And ultimately, a couple of years later, as I said earlier this year, in fact, they were acquired by FireEye. It was a very good exit for us. We were the only venture investor in the company. And so we created a lot of value. Our corporate partners also found a lot of value from the company itself. So that's one example that we brought kind of like full circle, if you will, around our model. The second work is what we're doing around autonomous mobility. So one of our ongoing theses is around how big data and AI enable autonomy. We've made four investments so far in that space. And again, identifying companies like Metamoto in the area of simulation, autonomous vehicle simulation, Renovo in the area of data fusion and analytics for the sensor data, and a few others. But again, these both the areas to invest in as well as ultimately the startups that we have elected to invest in have come through these interactions and the analytics that we do from the databases that we maintain.
Got it. Well, I do want to talk more about mobility and driverless vehicles. You and I have been discussing this for a few weeks now, and I'd love to go deep on that topic today. And I think a good place to start, kind of how you laid out in the book, is to talk about some of the key drivers of automotive disruption. Can you highlight some of those major drivers? And then maybe we'll talk about how that applies for startups and opportunities for tech disruption.
Yeah. So first of all, we have to look at the drivers that deal with consumer mobility, which is what the book has been focusing on because of all the attention that it is getting. And these drivers are different from the mobility of transportation of goods. So let's leave the transportation of goods to the side for the time being. But in terms of the consumer mobility, we have urbanization being a big driver. So we have a great movement of populations into cities. We have increasing densities in urban areas, which facilitate this shared mobility. We have another factor is in some geographic areas, is the aging of the population, which will require more robotics-driven help, including autonomous mobility. Mm-hmm. Actually, the sharing economy is another factor that, again, is impacting different segments of the population, particularly the younger segments. And there are a few more, but these tend to be kind of major trends and major factors that impact the move to autonomy and the interest in autonomy.
Got it. And can we talk about sort of the role of big data and machine intelligence on autonomous vehicles and mobility?
Yeah, so big data, I think, and combined with AI, play are key ingredients. And again, to date, the bulk of the interest by all of both us, both the investor side, the entrepreneur side, and even the large corporations that have gotten into the space and increasingly more and more are getting into the space, deal with enabling autonomy. So making a vehicle go by itself from point A to point B. And in doing that, there's a lot of data and AI that is being used from the mapping of the areas where autonomous vehicles operate to the actual operation of the vehicle, the planning, the understanding of the environment, and the control of the various components of the vehicle. But I think there is even a much bigger role of big data, both for the personalization of the cabin itself, right? So we have been thinking about, well, what will individuals do once they are in this vehicle and they have to travel medium to long-term distances? I'm not talking about what happens when you drive for a mile or two, let's say within Manhattan, but what happens if you are in Los Angeles and you have to take a 20-mile commute ride? So personalization of the cabin is big data and AI can play a very big role. And we're already working with a couple of our corporate partners on helping them understand that and determine what kind of startup investments to make and versus what kind of internal developments to pursue. There's also a big role in that big data and AI can play in developing these personalized transportation experiences. So today we've been thinking of autonomous mobility as summoning a vehicle, getting into the vehicle from point A and being dropped off at point B. But imagine a situation where from the point that you are ready to exit your home, let's say in the morning, until the time that you return home and all the journey that you're making on a daily basis and the various modalities of transportation that you have to utilize in the process are all planned for you, right? In order to maximize your convenience, to minimize the amount of idle time, to take into account the weather conditions, the traffic conditions, your comfort and all of that. And that's where I think big data will play with AI, will play a critical role. We're already seeing in places like San Francisco, the use of trains combined with ride hailing, combined with bikes and more recently scooters. All of that can start coming together in a seamless experience that is tailored to each individual. And in order to be able to do that, we will need to be going through a lot of data and analyzing it properly and combining it properly in order to give the right personalized experience.
Great. And you've mentioned a few of the different types of transport. You've mentioned a few of the different technologies that play here. It seems like everyone I talk to about mobility and autonomous vehicles kind of has a different frame or a different lens by which they kind of look at this opportunity. Can you give us an overview of your framework, the one that you use for investing in mobility, and maybe also talk about some of the new investment areas in the category?
Yeah. So we have not invested in vehicles, and there has been a lot of investment we feel that has gone into both vehicles, into particular modes of transportation, as well as complete autonomous vehicle stacks. In other words, the AI capability, the soup to nuts AI capability that enables a vehicle to become autonomous.
Right.
We have shied away from it, frankly, because these tend to be capital intensive spaces that attract big players. In fact, some of these big players are corporate investors and corporate partners of ours. So through these interactions, we have decided not to focus on that. Instead, as our initial thesis around autonomy has been enabling the autonomy. So in a sense, providing the picks and shovels that help other corporations achieve their autonomous vehicle goals. So this is why we invested in Divergent 3D, which is providing a manufacturing system for next generation vehicles using big data and AI and additive manufacturing methods. We have invested in Metamoto, as I said before, which is providing a cloud-based simulation system for simulating autonomous vehicles and their performance. We have invested in Understand.ai, a German company that is using machine learning to automatically annotate all the images, video, LiDAR, radar that are being used in order to train the AI that these autonomous vehicles utilize. And as I said before, we've invested in Renovo, which provides essentially a middleware for fusing data from the hundreds of sensors that these vehicles have and analyzing it and then feeding that data to the AI so that it can make the right decision. So again, this is the picks and shovels approach. More recently, we've started moving to our second thesis, which is around monetizing, enabling the monetization of that autonomy. And the first investment we've made in that space is a company called Safegraph, which analyzes very large quantities of data to understand the daily journeys of consumers, based on the example that I mentioned a few minutes ago, so that the various companies that are going to offer mobility services using autonomous vehicles, they will be able to use the decisions and the analytics that Safegraph is developing in order to, as I said, provide these customized transportation solutions. So going forward, we're looking at more investments in this monetizing autonomy thesis.
So with Safegraph, how will they monetize if they have this coordinated, transport solution end to end? Where is the monetization piece there?
So the monetization piece is essentially doing what Nielsen is doing for media. So it's giving you insight about what consumers do. So the companies that are providing this type of transportation services are buying insights, if I can call it that, from Safegraph in order to be able to provide better service to their own consumers, very much like media companies are buying insights from Nielsen in order to be able to provide better programming on TV and other media to their audience.
I see. So while we're talking about business models, can you talk about some of these different business models that have emerged and the ones that will be adopted with autonomous vehicles and on-demand mobility services?
Yeah. So I would say that today we do not have a very clear picture, and the we meaning the corporations, companies and corporations that are working on autonomous transportation they do not have a clear idea about what will work and what will not work. We have, however, some initial hypotheses. The first model that is very likely to be adopted initially would be transaction-based. This would be an extension of what we are doing today or what ride-hailing companies are doing today. So you want to go from point A to point B, and there is an algorithm that is minutes-based and distance-based that prices that transaction. Mm-hmm. Okay? I think very quickly we will also move to subscription-based model. So maybe for medium-based distances, maybe for commuting-based transportation, you could think these companies adopting various forms of subscription models. And then I also think that over time, I do not know how quickly, but we've seen some startups already thinking about that. We will move to advertising-based models. And I see those, again, being in shorter distances, maybe relating to entertainment. You know, so in other words, I'm in a downtown area and there is transportation that is being offered based from the venues, not based on, but from the venues that offer entertainment around a specific area, maybe around a convention or around, let's say, a downtown area. I can also see advertising-driven models being extended to last-mile delivery, right, where maybe a retailer or a grocer can say, if you only buy from us, we can deliver things for free. So again, that type of combination. So this will be models around the robo-taxi, the ride-hailing part, the mobility services part of autonomous transportation. Then I think we'll see a family of business models around the big data monetization. So whether it is the entertainment that is being offered while we are transported or other types of digital information, whether it is the various convenience services that are being utilized while being transported, whether it is weather or something like that, those can be monetized. Also, whether you are alone in the cabin or you're sharing the cabin and what kind of conveniences you want in the cabin while you're being transported. And then I think we will have a third family of models will be around fleet management. So the companies that offer, that manage and maintain these fleets, robo-taxi fleets, are going to have their own models, which can be based on the size of the fleet. They can be based on the value of the goods being transported or the maybe distance-based. So again, I think we'll see variations there. But the point is that, in my opinion, we'll see three broad families of models, one for the robo-taxis, one for the data itself, and one for the fleet management and maintenance.
Seems like there's a lot that needs to happen and to evolve in order for some of these business models to really take hold. What sort of timeline do you think we're looking at for each of those?
You know, Nick, I've had a number of conversations about this. And in fact, even in anticipation of our conversation today, I've interacted with a couple of individuals who I respect. I tend to be more conservative on my timeline. And I think that we will start to see enduring and repeatable monetization maybe 2022-23. I know that some corporations, whether it is Waymo, whether it is GM, Ford, they claim that they will start charging for their rides earlier. And I do not doubt that they will do that. But again, my thinking about a business model is when I have repeatable operation and something enduring, as opposed to the experimentation that may need to go through during a pilot phase. I also believe that while we are making great progress on the technology front of autonomy, and we will be able to address many of the remaining problems over the next 2-3 years, there are several other issues that remain to be addressed, whether it is liability, privacy, cybersecurity, transportation infrastructure. And those issues, in my opinion, given what I know and given the discussions that I've been having with players around the world, I think will take longer to resolve than just the pure technology problem. So when I talk about these business models starting to take off around 2022, 23, my statement is not only based on the technology part, but also on all of these other components that will need to be addressed.
Got it. Well, I'm sure that that informs sort of your investment approach. Evangelos, I'd like to hear your thoughts on technologies on board that are within sort of the autonomous vehicle environment, and then and those things that are outside of the vehicle but necessary for AV to be a standard. How do you think about each of those, and do you invest outside of the vehicle as well or not?
Okay, so we will definitely invest outside the vehicle. Now, the question would be, again, what are the investments that can be done by a startup and ultimately, you know, successful company or a large corporation, and what needs to be done by governments, whether it is city governments or country governments? And this is something that we grapple with. So today, within the vehicle, with regards to autonomy per se, the problem that remains a vexing one is to be able to look ahead or to predict the movement of vehicles and individuals and pedestrians and other entities that can impact the planning decisions of the vehicle itself. And today, while we're getting better at that, we still do not have a long enough horizon to allow us to deal with the complex environments of big cities.
Yep.
This is why when I think of how autonomy will progress, how or will be deployed, I think we'll go from shuttles, you know, whether it is campus shuttles to city shuttles, and then move to maybe trucks that are driving in highways, maybe in dedicated lanes or in, with some constraints, and then ultimately to cities of arbitrary complexity. So in other words, we'll be moving from more constrained to less constrained environments. So as investors, we pay a lot of attention to these developments because they will definitely impact how long we will expect to hold this, the investments that we make. I mean, in other words, I don't believe that we will have, in many cases, quick exits. So this is within, you know, as I said, within the vehicle. We're also looking at the various sensors and data that can be collected now within the cabin so that we can provide these personalized experiences. And finally, we are looking at what other data will need to be collected in order to make decisions around fleet management, because again, one of our beliefs in this space is that whether it is on the consumer transportation or whether it is on logistics, the autonomous mobility will be adopted by fleets and less so by individuals. So not that there will not be personally owned vehicles with autonomous features, but we think that the broader application of these technologies will be done by fleets. So fleet management we see as a very critical, various aspects of fleet management we see as very critical component of this whole enterprise. And along with fleet management, we don't only mean how the fleet moves and is able to execute on a minute-by-minute basis, which means that's what brings the revenue to the company that operates the fleet, but also when the fleet needs to be maintained, how the fleet, in order to maximize the uptime, how the fleet needs to behave in order to maximize the passenger revenue miles as opposed to just miles, how to minimize the cost of maintenance. So there are a number of very important decisions, thankfully, are all data and AI driven, that are now going to become key in this area as we're starting to deploy fleets of these vehicles as opposed to just worrying about making a vehicle capable of going from point A to point B autonomously.
Right. You mentioned exits. Can you talk about some of the notable companies funded in this space and potential exits over the short, medium, and long term?
So I think in the short term, we will see two types of exits. We will see big exits, very much like Cruise, acquired by GM. Yeah. or Newtonomy being acquired by Aptiv, of companies that have core technology which the acquirers feel they need to access in order to create their solution or to complete their stack. So you have various models of how these companies go about creating their offering. In the same time, I think we will also have some tuck-in acquisitions of smaller scale exits of companies that, you know, as it happens in every other field, they got initially funded, but they have not been able to scale properly. So if you look at the acquisition of Oro by Nauto, you know, it's again this type of exit. Medium term, we will see exits of companies that are either getting quick scale and they have the ability to go public, or companies being acquired because they have a successful solution and their acquirer may have tried to do something similar, but they failed. So now the acquirer is moving to make an acquisition in order of a successful company in order to complete their solution. But I think those will take a few years until, in other words, these startups are able to demonstrate their mettle. And then ultimately, longer term, we will have exits of companies that are successful and scale, and they have the ability to go public under any market condition. And maybe even after they go public, they even get acquired. So they're venture investors, they can do the so-called double dipping. But that's how I see in this space of autonomous mobility, the three horizon of exits.
What do you think happens to the large incumbent automakers?
Well, you know, I wrote a piece on my blog a few weeks ago, and I stated that I believe we're going to have five categories of incumbents. As it pertains to incumbents, I think we will have the ones who have decided to develop autonomous vehicles. And then the question is whether they will stop at just developing the vehicles or also offering mobility services, or stop only at the offering of the vehicles. Again, if we assume a world of shared mobility, which again, depending on what kind of horizon you want to take, in the book, I take a 40-year or so horizon. I do not believe that the incumbent ecosystem as we know it today, especially the non-Chinese automakers, I don't think that we will be able to have the number of incumbents that we have today. The market, in other words, will not be able to sustain it. But a lot of things can happen over a 40-year period, so it's not clear.
Got it. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode of TFR is brought to you by Square One Bank. Square One specializes in providing financial services to startups, growth stage companies, and their investors, helping to navigate financial obstacles by providing access to funds and expertise. Square One's customized products and team of venture banking specialists provide a banking experience designed specifically with startups and VCs in mind. I myself am a big fan of Square One's offerings and have been using them for nearly a year. Visit squareonebank.com to learn more. Do you find that the best opportunities in this area are in Silicon Valley and Israel and China, or do you find sort of interesting big data and AI startups working on mobility related problems outside of those areas?
Well, I would say that, first of all, we are seeing a great selection of startups working in these areas of AI. Let's stay very top level first, and big data around the world. So many European kind of like from Scandinavia to Greece, if you will, and every country in between, we see companies developing interesting technologies. The question in all of these cases is whether you want to, how far away from your home base you want to go in order to invest in such companies. The approach that we have taken, because again, we've made investments abroad, is if we find local partners that we trust and have the same approach to governance that we do, then we will definitely partner and make such investments. Now, as it pertains to mobility, I think that we are seeing a lot of ideas from around the world, again, from outside the countries that you mentioned. But we do believe that these companies can benefit greatly if there is certain parts of the automotive industry around them. So I think that German companies, for example, working on various aspects of autonomous mobility benefit greatly. Same thing with French companies, UK. I mean, we're looking right now at an investment in the UK. And we've been quite impressed not only with the company that we are considering, but also with other startups that we've seen in the process. So, I think that this type of innovation, autonomous mobility innovation, is taking the world by storm, and we're seeing some very interesting ideas from around the world.
Yeah, and can you talk more about how you at Synapse identify the areas to invest in, you know, create value for your portcos, and also how you help them drive exits?
So the fact that we focus in this area of big data exclusively on big data applications, either horizontal or vertical, that only target the enterprise, allows us to greatly constrain the universe that we are considering. The second aspect, and we know the technology very, very well. I mean, because of our backgrounds and the years that we've been investing in this space, even before starting Synapse. The work that we're doing with our corporate partners not only helps us in identify areas to invest and big strategic problems to try to solve, but also once we make the investment, we have the portfolio companies have a great initial target opportunity with these partner company corporations. And by the way, we absolutely lean on our corporate partners during the pre-investment diligence process to gather perspective, to maybe sometimes do a POC to see how the startup performs. So it's a great, great advantage that we believe we have.
Interesting.
But the way that we identify targets also is, you know, target investments is by using this database that I mentioned before that we have, that we constantly update and score. So again, the investment that we made in understand.ai, we identify the space through this type of interactions that I mentioned, but we identify the company, which is based in Karlsruhe, in Germany, southern Germany, through our database. And we started working or talking to them in June of 2017, and we made the investment in December of 2017. Similarly, when we were looking, I mean, this is an earlier story, but the decision to invest in Renovo came under that type of analysis and set of interactions. And once we make the investment, in addition to the connections that we make to these corporate partners, sometimes, by the way, these corporate partners end up either co-investing with us or coming to invest at a later round. But I think because of the subject matter expertise that we have as a firm, we get very involved with how the offering of each of these portfolio companies evolves. And you can think of it as both us rolling up our sleeves, but also think our opinion and insight is sought after by our portfolio companies. And so I think there is value that is being created not only through this corporate introductions, but also through the work that we do as a firm.
And Evangelos, remind me, what stage do you like to enter at, and what's kind of your standard check size?
Yeah, so we invest in what is now being called post-seed and Series A. Again, it depends very much what has been the startup's funding history. And there is a very simple reason for that. It's that in these corporations we work with, we like the portfolio companies to have a little bit of quote-unquote meat around the bone. Mm. So that means that maybe there is a first version of the product, maybe there are a few POCs or some paying customers before we come in. And our initial check size tends to be a few hundred thousand, depending on the company and the opportunity that we perceive. And then we tend to, again, for the reasons that I mentioned earlier, we tend to continue investing in later rounds as well.
And what advice would you have for founders that are working on AV and or mobility tech?
So I think for me, I'll tell you something that I learned through the readers of the book. Okay. It is very surprising to me how many founders start companies in this space and they do not really understand the dynamics of the automotive industry, which is, you know, over $1 trillion a year industry, okay, excluding the energy side of the automotive industry.
Right.
So my advice would be that they really need to understand how the industry works today, because we hear a lot of statements. I mean, we have companies coming to present to us, and you know, you have this statement such as, oh, I'm going to disrupt the automotive industry. And many times, once you start digging a little bit into the presentation, you realize that these are vacuous statements, that these people do not really understand the ins and outs of the industry in order to be able to make that type of statement in an authoritative manner.
Right.
So I think that's important. The other thing is, this happens in every other space, is you really need to understand how crowded a subspace will be. I mean, right now, I mean, I'll tell you, just in our database, we have over 1,000 startups working in auto tech that we track. Okay. We have invested in 5, right? But we track about 1,000. And every single subspace is, you know, whether it is mapping, whether it is, you know, planning, there's a lot of competition, right? So I think the companies that are that either want to enter this next generation mobility space, or even ones that are already in this area and they're trying to determine what will be their next steps, they really need to understand what is their competitive advantage and what their competition does, and also who is their competition, because it is a lot more crowded than I think many founders that at least we meet with seem to believe.
Right, right. Evangelos, if we could cover any topic here on the program, what topic do you think should be addressed and who would you like to hear speak about it?
I actually believe that it would be great to talk about how we avoid the AI winter, a repeat of the AI winter that we had in 91, 92. Again, I got into AI actually in 1982. And lived through the previous AI spring that was followed by a very long winter. We had, at that time, we had similar scale excitement about AI as we have now. Obviously, we had fewer people working on it from fewer countries with less venture investment going into it. And ultimately, we had, as I said, certain failures that led to a very long winter. I think given the amount of money that is going into artificial intelligence from all corners of the world, from corporations and individuals and venture funds and private equity funds and governments and all that, I think if we can have some more discussions about that and how to avoid another debacle and have more sustained success, that'd be great.
And finally, Evangelos, what investor has inspired and influenced you most and why?
You know, when I got into the venture industry, I consider myself very lucky to have been mentored by Alan Patrickoff, who was one of the founders of Apax Partners. And Alan actually taught me both how to look at deals and not get overly excited, even though I believe that sometimes I do get overly excited, but also how to persevere through, in a sense, through thick and thin, if you will. And I see Alan obviously retire from Apax, and now he built yet another success with Greycroft Partners.
Yeah,
he's been able to attract some really talented people around him and continues to build a great company. So to me, he's actually a great inspiration. And I, as I said, I consider myself lucky to have been mentored by him as I was making my first steps as a venture investor.
Excellent. And then what's the best way for listeners to connect with you?
So I'm very good with email, and my email is ecmoodys@synapsepartner.co, not NM at the end. I also have my blog, it's corporateinnovation.co, and I get messages there. And finally, LinkedIn, I get quite a bit of traffic there, and I try to stay on top of it.
Great. Well, Evangelos, it was great to read the book, and even more of a pleasure to get a chance to connect with you here and get your thoughts on the program. Thanks so much for making the time, and look forward to connecting again soon.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
All right, that'll wrap up today's interview. If you enjoyed the episode or a previous one, let the guest know about it. Share your thoughts on social or shoot them an email. Let them know what particularly resonated with you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that some of the smartest folks in venture are willing to take the time and share their insights with us. If you feel the same, a compliment goes a long way. Okay, that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember to overprepare, choose carefully, and invest confidently. Thanks so much for listening.